Are you a big brain of the beautiful game? Prove it with the great new app that'll test your football knowledge to the limit. Name That Player. Download the Name That Player app today and race against the clock to identify the Premier League players purely from a list of the clubs they've played for. Put your football knowledge to the ultimate test with the Name That Player app. Available right now for iOS and Android from the App Store and Google Play. Name That Player. Can you beat the best?
Shoot the defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to a special edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Del, and joining me is a gentleman who, well, played over 300 games for West Ham in the 70s, played alongside the late, great Bobby Moore in the 75 FA Cup winning team. He made his professional debut at 15 at Leyton Orient. And, if my research is correct, he was the 1972 Professional Footballers Golf Championship runner-up. It's Tommy Taylor. How you doing, Tommy?
I'm fine. I didn't even know that, mate.
Ah. I think Brian Pop Robson beat you the year after.
Oh, Pop was magnificent.
Oh, how are you doing anyway?
Yeah. I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm over in India at the moment. Now this virus has taken over. Everybody's in the same situation. Everybody's just sitting there doing nothing.
Mm. Yeah, we've had this problem. Everyone's had this problem, as you said. So, I don't know how long this is going to last. They're talking about lockdown being slowly lifted in the UK, but I'm not sure if that's a good thing just yet, to be fair.
Yeah, I know. It'll be what it'll be at the end of the day, mate. And that's, we've just got to just watch, everybody's just got to watch yourself and just be safe.
Mm. How's everyone coping out there then? Are they following the guidelines?
I've got to say, when I first come over to India, I thought that was all over the place here, but they're really strict with themselves. The police were on the streets all the time. Last 2 weeks, we was allowed to go to the shops from 8 in the morning to 11. Then the police would blow the whistles and the shops would shut and everybody would go home. And, and that's how they've been. So they're really strict here.
Nice, excellent, excellent. So, what are you doing in India then?
I come over to... Lord Ram asked me to come over about 3 years ago, and I come over a couple of months of each year just to do a bit of coaching for the kids. That's all.
Okay, okay. No plans to get into management there then?
No. I mean, if something popped up, that'd be great. But at the moment, everything is shut. Nothing's going to move over here for months.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Well, let's talk about your days at the Orient. You made your debut at 15 years old. Did you have much of a youth career then, after being thrown in the deep end at such a young age?
At the Orient, it was an unbelievable place there. I mean, we used to get 15,000 people as a crowd. And over the tannoy, used to come up 3,000 and things like that. It was hilarious sometimes. Just being with them kind of people in them days was an experience. I mean, I was an apprentice, and I still stayed an apprentice even when I was like playing for them. And I put my overalls on. I was a boot boy, so before the game, I used to go and get everybody's boots ready, put them out, take my overalls off, put my kit on, and play. Then get back in, put my overalls back on, and go and clean the boots after the game.
Mm.
And I was as a YTS boy again. Good time, though. Good times, they were.
So, did you have any footballers that you were looking after? Because, as far as I'm aware, back in those days, you had one or two players, and you'd be doing their laundry, but you'd be preparing it, getting their kit, making sure it goes on the bus, etc., etc.
No. I just looked after all the boots.
All right. Okay.
All the boots. I've two pairs of boots for everybody, so that was enough. Just looking after that and getting them all ready. They all come in the way they wanted them cleaned and things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was good times. Good times. We had to. Apart from that, you know, you had to go out on the pitch, roll the pitch, put the sand on the pitch, get the pitch ready. I remember we come back from a game in the morning because the boys used to play in the morning. We finished, and then the manager called all the boys out. We want you running down the line with the ball, and we want our fullbacks tackling you and kicking you over the wall. And I remember before I got into the first team, I run down the line with the ball, and I could see the fullback coming towards me, and it was a wet. The pitch was a bit wet, and as he's just gone to ground, I've just knocked it past him. I've jumped over his legs, and the manager shouted out to me, "Are you supposed to be over the wall?" I said, "Well, I'm a bit quick on him, boss." I went, "So I'm not going over the wall." Yeah, it was hilarious.
Fantastic, absolutely brilliant. So, tell me something. When you're looking at youngsters these days, right, and how. They're mollycoddled, let's be fair. Right? A lot of these big clubs, in fact, most clubs, wrap these players up in cotton wool. When it comes to your apprenticeship at the club, how did that set you up career-wise?
I think it made you a better person. You looked up to the senior players with more respect. And you just looked for them for even guidance when you was on the field as well. But I mean, the manager put you in the team because you was good enough to be in the team. But, you know, some of the younger boys now, they go out on loan even before they play for their club. That's the thing. But to get experience somewhere else. You want to be at your club to get into the first team. You don't want to go out on loan somewhere else. You want to be in the first team.
Fair enough. Okay, so... What can you tell me about the 1969-1970 season?
Tell me a bit more.
Didn't you guys win...
Time's gone quick, mate, I tell you.
Didn't you guys win Division 3?
That was... let me tell you a story about one of our... We had two wingers. We had Mark Lazarus on one wing.
Mm.
And we had Peter Braybrook on the other one. Up two elderly... You know, they've come to the end of their careers. Peter Braybrook was unbelievable. Mark Lazarus was such a character. He used to score a goal and then jump in the stand and come back down the other end and jump over the wall. He was about 15 minutes coming through the crowd. They were pushing through the crowd to come back onto the game. And we was playing a team one day. Everybody's got their jobs to do. Even, you know, football nowadays, they've got their jobs to do. Who's picking who up, who's marking the near post, who's on the areas, who's on this and that. And Mark's job was to stay up on the halfway line. And this caller's just got, just before they got Mark in front of me, I went, "Mark, what are you doing back here?" And I'm only 15. I said, "Mark, what are you doing back here?" He said, "I had to come back, somebody fell over on the halfway line." And Mark loved to fight. He's only knocked the defender out and got back in without him. He was mad, but he was
fantastic.
Unbelievable character. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he was.
Okay, well, before we talk about your move to West Ham, I believe you played for England in a youth international game where you beat Republic of Ireland 10-0. Do you remember that one?
That's another one as well, I don't know. Mate, I just played games and that was... I can't remember winning 10-0. I can't remember that.
No?
I don't know.
I think you're in the team with Steve Perryman, I think.
Yeah, Stevie was there. I mean, Tony Towers was in them as well from Man City. There's quite a few of the boys what pushed on and got into the first teams as well. So,
okay, yeah. Fair enough. What was Perryman like as a footballer?
Steve... Even at a young age, was exactly the same as he was as he got older and older and older. Still the same, competitive, wanted to win the ball. Throw-ons, he used to come away, they'd drop off and go and get the ball, knock it back. Wherever the ball was, he wanted to have the ball. Yeah,
excellent.
He was a good lad. Yeah.
Okay, So you earn your move to West Ham, so you didn't have to travel far, to be fair. £100,000, huge amount of money for footballers back in those days.
Yeah, this is. Let me tell you the way it happened. We played a game on the Saturday, and this happened on the Monday morning. And Saturday, I had a back pass back, and it got caught in a massive puddle of water just outside the box. The ball stopped, the centre forward went for a goal. So it's my fault for the goal. I hold my hand up. Boom. Coming out the back of the stand at late night, and I'm coming through, and the manager's office is like on the outside, just on the outside, big glass window there, but it's a frosty window. So he sees a shadow walking past in the morning, bangs on the window. Did see you come in. This is God's honest truth. This is how it happened. Jimmy Bloomfield, lovely, lovely manager, great person, and knocked on. So I've knocked on the door. Come in, boy, Bob, come in. He said, not training today. I said, what? Because we lost the game, it was my fault because of the goal. He went, no, I've sold you. I said, what do you mean you sold me? He said, well, I've sold you, I had to sell you. The club need the money. Otherwise, we won't have a football club. I said, well, where you sold me to? He said, meet me at Upton Park at 12 o'clock. Go out. Now, I'm on the train. I'll get a train to go home. I said, I'm not going to go home now, boss. He said, we'll go to the cafe and go and have a breakfast. He said, I'll meet you there. So I had to get on the train, go to Upton Park, walk down to the ground. I got to the ground, got to the gates, and there was a security bloke on the gate. He went, can I help you? I went, oh, you can if you can. I said, I need to go and see Mr. Greenwood. Well, who are you? I went, well, I'm nobody, but I've got to see Mr. Greenwood. He went, let me get on the phone. What's your name? So I told him my name. He went, oh, yeah, let him straight through, let him upstairs. So I've gone up the stairs. So Jimmy Bloomfield sitting there with Ron Greenwood. Ron Greenwood's got everything in front. Mate, all the paperwork's done. Everything's done. Just put your name in there, Tommy. So I said, what if I don't want to sign it? I said, what do you mean if you don't want to sign it? Everything's been done. I said, well, no one's asked me. This is just saying it's just been done, and everybody thinks it's okay. Don't you want to come here? I went, I don't know. I said, I'm happy. I've been happy at Leighton Orient. He went, listen. I said, what? Before I sign that bit of paper, where am I going to play? Because I wasn't the centre half. I was the number six. I was like playing alongside. I could run a little walkabout if I wanted. I was one of those. I could go into midfield. I could push out to the full-back position. I could you know, carry the ball forward if I wanted to then. You got to play centre-half. I said, I'm not a centre-half. He said, you got to play centre-half because, you know, we got Bobby here. I said, I know you've got Bobby Moore here. I said, but at the end of the day, I don't want to play centre-half. He said, play there for 2 years and Bobby will be moving on. I said, 2 years, heading the ball. I said, I'm not going to head the ball, I'm going to pull it down. I said, I'll head it a couple of times, but I'm going to pull it down and play. He said, you can do what you like. You can do it, right? And mate, I signed a 3-year contract. And then I was there for like 9 years. I was there for nine, and I still was centre half when I left.
Incredible. So yeah. you joined the club round about the time when you had players like Trevor Brooking and Frank Lampard breaking through. So they were quite young, whereas you had other players that were the back end of their careers, maybe like Bobby Moore. Who else would you say was the back end of their careers?
Ersley was there. Boycie was an unbelievable footballer in midfield, but he was coming to the end of his career as well. So he went on the coaching staff. What a footballer he was.
Yeah. Was Jimmy Greaves there at the time?
Greaves, he come a season after, I believe.
Right, okay. So yeah. Let's talk about your first season at the club then. Bigger crowds, I presume. Was there much pressure to deliver?
No. It was. I loved the crowd. I could go and play, like, when was at Wembley, and it was one of those places that, like, it was just a big hum, and you just wanted to be out there and playing in front of them people. Half the time you don't even know they're there. You're that concentrated on the game.
Mm.
You don't even know they're there. That's okay. When you're playing some good football, that's how it is.
Brilliant. Okay, so you were obviously in the same squad as Jimmy Greaves, Jeff Hurst, two legends of our game. Both of them had contrasting, contrasting situations in the 66 World Cup. Had it not been for Jimmy Greaves' injury, I don't think Jeff Hurst would have played in the final, would he? So what was it like playing with both of them?
Firstly, you could hit a ball, you could be round the box and your head would be down and you'd just hit a ball just to get to the halfway line.
Right.
And wherever you hit the ball, Ersley was always there. Always there picking it up. I mean, he was on the right, he'd drift out to the right because we were used to aiming, you know, kind of areas to hit people. And he was always in the area to pick the ball up. Nine times out of ten, you would hit him. Nine times out of ten. He was, you know, that kind of person. He was big as well, Jack. He was very big.
Mm.
Big and strong. Where Jimmy Greaves was like, give me the ball in the box and I'll score a goal. You know, just put it across the 6-yard box and we'll score a goal.
That simple.
He had that talent to kind of do that. Pop Robson was the same.
Mm.
Pop was like that as well. I've got to say that. He's always across the near post looking for a goal. Yeah.
Okay. So when you look at the likes of Harry Redknapp, Billy Bonds, Trevor Brooking, even Frank Lampard Sr., when you were playing alongside them, could you tell that one day they would be West Ham legends?
Frank was already in the... I think he was already in the first team when I got there. Bonzo was Bonzo. He was the first one in, the first one out off the training ground. You know, he was one of those. But you know, these kind of boys, they just love their football. Just love their football. I love my football. I just wanted to be on the training ground, wait for the Saturday for the game, wait till Tuesday night for the game and things like that. I mean, when I first played, I think we had one sub. It was a manager, the physio, and a sub sitting in the dugout. And that was it. That's it. And then suddenly, two come across, then three, then four. I think they're looking at putting seven or eight in to finish the season, aren't they?
Yeah.
True. There's too many games coming on top of each other to finish it.
Mm. Okay, so let's talk about that 75 FA Cup winning team 45 years ago. Wow, I watched the highlights the other day, and it's just what I imagine or what I remember an FA Cup final to be like. Two teams wanting it. Your goalkeeping error gave you guys the opportunity to take the lead, which you did, and the rest is history, so to speak. So when you look at that squad, the actual day itself, what can you tell us about the preparations going into this game against Fulham? Because they had the likes of Alan Mullery there, didn't they?
And Morrow played. Mullery played at the back. You got to play well to get to a final.
Mm.
You got to have the luck as well to get to the final. Yeah, as well. So we had a bit of luck along the way as well when we played Ipswich. We drew, then we had to go to Chelsea to play another return game, and we beat them 2-1, but they scored a goal. I thought it was a good goal as well. They scored a goal, the referee disallowed it. Went, oh, blimey. It was one of those. I thought, okay, we got away with that one. Yeah, but I thought it was a good goal they scored as well. Oh yeah, with us boys at the back, we looked at each other and said, oh, don't say nothing, let's go. Yeah. But that was a great to the final. I mean, Friday night, we all of us went to the Dogs.
Okay, Walthamstow, yeah?
No, at Wembley.
Oh, Wembley. Oh, because they're the dog track. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, we went to the Dogs on the Friday night. We all jumped. There was 10 of us jumped into one taxi, and the last one out had to pay. There was people on the floor, back of the seats, everything. Last one out.
Blimey, you know, you're taking me back now, because I remember Wembley Market. I don't know if it's still there, to be fair. I don't know if they still did.
No, I don't know. But Friday night, we was there.
Wow, okay. So, FA Cup final day, arguably the biggest game in your career. How are you set mentally for this one?
It's just, to me, and most of all the other boys, just another game. It was another game. We had to win. We wanted to win. I went out every game wanting to win, and so did the boys. And that's I don't think of anything else. Just go and win it. I don't care how we win it. Let's win it. Come on. And that was it. I mean, you said we scored a lucky goal. Goalkeeper, what, did you go for his legs?
No, I didn't call it lucky. I just said that it was a goalkeeping mistake. He's palmed it straight to Taylor.
The second one went for his legs as well,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, the first one, he palmed it straight to Alan Taylor, and he just poked it in.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still got to be in the right place at the right time,
course,
hasn't he?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Not disputing that.
There we go. I mean, he scored a goal every FA Cup game to get to the final, I believe.
Well, blimey. Okay, yeah. So tell me something. When you cast your mind back to the 70s, which is probably one of the most competitive eras in English football, I'd say. You had Derby winning the league, Arsenal winning the league, Liverpool started their dominance then. Do you think football was less complicated back then? And by that, I mean these days, do you think there's too much emphasis on statistics and the psychology around the game?
Everybody played 4-4-2. Everybody played 4-4-2. Yeah. At the end of the team, the people with the most talent and the most skill and the quickest people and the best forwards usually won the game. You had to play some good football to win your games.
Okay, so as someone who wasn't alive to watch Bobby Moore play, we've heard so many stories about him, the famous challenge against Pelé in the 70 World Cup. What made Bobby Moore so special in your eyes?
Truthfully, when I first signed for him, we played Crystal Palace, second game. And there's as I walked through into the dressing room, I look through to always look at the bathrooms to see how big the baths are. And the bath was about 4 foot long by about 4 foot wide. And there was running water into the bath already, and I could see that there weren't a lot of water in there. It was finished up about 5 inches deep. And I thought to myself, right. And I see Morrow put his head around it there as well as he walked through. And I thought, I'll tell you what, I'll bet we're the first two in that bathroom after the game. And we was the first two in the bathroom. And we beat Crystal Palace. I think we beat them 1-0. Eddie Coke had scored his first goal for West Ham. And our feet are almost touching the other end of the bath as we're sitting in it. And there's like 11 boys got to get in the bath. But as they get in, the water's getting higher, so it doesn't matter. So I'm sitting in there and I said to him, Bob, he went, yeah, what's the matter? So I said, do me a favour, I'm not picking two people up no more. So he said, what do you mean? I said, well, two games I played, we played Tottenham and we played Chris, and I'm picking up two people. He said, well, I'm always behind you, ready to pick the ball up. I said, I don't want you picking the ball up. I said, I want you to pick people up. People score goals. He said, you're the first person to say that to me, so I'll take that on board and I'll carry on with that. So after that, we had great understanding, me and him. And but he was always there to pick the ball up, always there to run the ball out. Magnificent pass with the ball. read the game, unbelievable. Yeah. And we played together for until he left. Until he left.
Brilliant. And I didn't mention he was the captain when England won the World Cup in 66 because that was blatantly obvious. So I'm going to ask another obvious question. A lot of people talk about West Ham having a major influence in England winning the World Cup, obviously with Jeff Hurst there, Martin Peters and Bobby Moore. What was the atmosphere like in and around the club? I know it was 4 or 5 years after they'd won the World Cup when you joined, but what was it like at the club? Were people still talking about it then?
Not so much. All the press would be on top of it all the time, but players and staff was just, we just got on with what we had to get on with, and that was it. Mm. I mean, I don't think he was the kind of person to I pulled up anyway. He'd done his own thing, went out and done his own thing, and that was it.
When you look at the teams that won league titles back in those days, so for example, like Arsenal did the double in 70-71 with Bertie Mee as manager, and Liverpool went on to dominate. I think they won the league and the UEFA Cup in 73. Shankly, Paisley, etc., etc. Then you had Brian Clough with Derby County, all these other clubs. So who would you say was the most complete side you'd faced?
When I first went to West Ham.
Or throughout your career at the club?
Leeds.
Leeds, yeah.
Unbelievable they were.
Are we talking about the whole time you were at West Ham or perhaps that season when they won the league?
When they was the best side, they were unbelievable. I remember one game we played at Upton Park. We lost 2-1 to them. And Billy Bremner came across to me, went to the, "Would you like the tassels?" I said to him. So I said, "No thanks, Bill." In so many words, "No thanks, Bill." The tassels off his socks. He had Leeds United tassels on the side of his socks. Unbelievable. But they were some team. Some team. Unbelievable.
Norman Huntner, Gordon McQueen, Johnny
Jackie
Giles.
Whoever you talk about, they were great players. They were great players.
Yeah.
Great team. Organisation was unbelievable. Yeah.
It's incredible how things turn out because I think, wasn't Don Revie supposed to be going to Everton? But then there's some kind of rule about wages or something like that. And then he ended up staying at Leeds. And then went on to win the league that season.
Yeah, but I mean, the players they had at Leeds was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wherever you looked, they played for their country. Wherever you looked. They had
Terry Yorath there as well, didn't they? Wasn't Terry Yorath there as well?
Yep. It was such a good team. Such a good team.
There you go.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And just for the Arsenal fans that are listening, because we've got quite a few of them, to be fair. Do you remember much about that 71 double winning team?
Arsenal got better and better and stronger and stronger as it went along. We beat them in the FA Cup. When we got drawn against them, we went, "Oh, here we go." But Alan Taylor, we beat 2-0, I think. At Arsenal, and that's upset a few people straight away for you, mate. So you can beat them once in a while.
Absolutely. And my team, Man United, got relegated in 74. But prior to that, do you remember much about them?
Man United went, one game we played, we was 2-0 up one game, and I think we lost 5-3. Georgie Best, I've got a picture at home with it. There's five of us round Georgie Best. There's Johnny Mack, there's Bonzo, myself, Moro, and Clyde's in it. I don't know why he's back that far, to the truth. He's back there. and we've closed him down, and he's hit this ball, and it's just gone in the top corner. The man was... he could have been the first millionaire in England, most probably, if he'd done everything right for him. You know. But the man was unbelievable, wasn't he? The man was unreal when he was on the ball.
Well, see, this is it. We hear so many stories about him. We've seen the footage, especially the two hat-tricks against Northampton, where apparently he was pissed the night before.
Most probably.
But you've obviously been on the same pitch as him, and you've seen him firsthand. So, you said he was a great player, but would you say he was one of, if not the greatest, that you played against?
Most probably. I mean, there was in them days there were some great players, really, really good players. And if they played nowadays, mate, they would have been up there with them as well.
Dennis Law back then as well, and Willie Morgan.
Yeah, Dennis Law. Yeah, Bobby Charlton.
Bobby Charlton. Yeah.
Nobby Styles. Yeah, they was all out there. Yeah. Yeah. I remember. I'm sure it was against that. We played at Upton Park, and I couldn't stop laughing. Frank's on the halfway line, and he was like jockeying back against Georgie Best, and suddenly he's just turned. And he's sprinting back to his own box. Let him have the ball, and he's sprinting back to his own box. And then he stood there waiting for him to come to the edge of the box because he knew he would have outrun him before he got to the box. So he thought, right, I've got you here. Now you've only got so many yards to get past me. Yeah, it was one of those things. Where are you going, Frank? We've got to go with you because you're running back on your own. So the ball had to go back as well. you never see him football again, mate. You never see him football again.
Yeah, it seems that times were more enjoyable back then.
Yeah, I mean, you got on with the crowd.
Yeah.
You got on with the crowd. The crowd were, if you had a few bad balls, they was on top of you. It's fair enough. They pay their money. But I always say to them, you know, people who say, "Oh, he's moaning and he's moaning." I said, "Listen, if they pay their money, they can say what they like." It's when they get a free ticket and they moan, then they shouldn't say what they like.
That's fair enough. Okay, going back to that 75 season, mate, you guys got to the Cup Winners' Cup final. And you lost it wasn't over two legs. Was it over two legs of the Cup Winners' Cup back then? Can't remember.
No, final was one leg.
One game. It was the UEFA Cup that was two legs, wasn't it? So you played in Armenia that season. You played in Germany, in Holland. What was it like travelling around back in those days?
We had a chartered plane everywhere we went. So we went to Russia, and me and Johnny Mac always shared a room, and we went up. We got into our room for the game, and we got there the night before, so. We got into the room and all the light switches were pulled off the wall. And then something else happened. And I said, I pulled the bed back. I said, I'm not sleeping in there tonight. So me and John, we slept in the bath. He was up the tap end and I was at the other end. And we put our blankets and our pillows in the bath. We slept in the bath the night before the game.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, see, that would never happen in these days. Never.
No. We didn't say nothing. We went, right, let's just, don't say nothing to the, you know, to the manager. We just get in the bath, go to sleep, and that's it, and get up the next morning.
Fantastic.
Didn't have time to go to the toilet anyway.
Bloody hell. Wow. Yeah. And as for the final against Anderlecht, that was some team back in the 70s, wasn't it, Anderlecht, the Belgians?
Yeah, truthfully, we didn't have a lot. Ron didn't say a lot about him. He said, let's go out and play our game. Play our game, we win the game. And, went 1-0 up. I think Patsy scored the goal. Patsy Honour scored the goal first to go 1-0 up. And then we conceded the goal just before half time. And Ron had to make a couple of changes, and that was, you know, I think we lost 2-1 at the end. I believe it was 2-1.
Yeah,
great game. The atmosphere was unbelievable.
Well, I think
Bonzo didn't turn up. He went straight to the game because his wife's side of the family, one of the family had died. I think it was so Bill had to be there with her, and he come out really late for the game. So he just got there just before the game. Bill did. Yeah.
Mm. Brilliant. So in terms of away grounds that you've played in, which would you say is the most hostile?
Liverpool was unbelievable.
Yeah.
The noise was unbelievable. Leeds, they abused you. Which was great. I remember we played the I think it was a semi or the quarter finals against Leeds in the League Cup, and we played Leeds at home. We scored two goals. The referee disallowed both of them up before half time. So we finished the game 0-0. Finished it 0-0. So we had to go back up there. And Clark was playing. And next minute I know we're doing the warm up, and they're throwing bananas on the field. So we all jogged up to up to Bestie, picked up a banana, started eating, threw the skins back in the crowd. And we said to Bestie, "Don't worry about it, mate. Let's play." And we beat them 1-0 on the night. So that upset them even more then. Yeah. So it was they tried to intimidate everybody when they was here because they had such a good team. But on the night we beat them. So. And then we had to play Stoke. Yeah, it was a quarter final. Then we played Stoke, and we played four games we played, and we finished up at Old Trafford, and we lost 3-2. I think it was 3-2. Moro was in goal, and it was a penalty. Yeah, but Fergie got carried off, so Moro went in goal for that. And I think they played Chelsea in the final, and they won.
Sure, they played Chelsea. There you are. Okay, so you left West Ham in 79, and then you had a little bit of a spell in Hawaii, I believe, was it? Wasn't it in Hawaii on loan?
No, I was at West Ham at the time, in 1977 that was.
Team Hawaii, yeah, that's right. You went on loan. There was an NASL side in America.
Yeah, in Hawaii, it was an unbelievable place. Patsy, Keith Coleman, Keith Robson, yeah, we're out there, and they asked me to go out there as well. So I went out there, took the wife and the little one with me. Unbelievable place. Yeah, going to Hawaii. Right, our apartment was on Pearl Harbor. The stadium faced Pearl Harbor. And the stadium, if the wind was coming too much off Pearl Harbor, they used to turn the stadium around to keep the wind out of the stadium.
Wow.
Incredible.
Wow. That's impressive. Blimey.
Yeah. I had like two really good months there. Come back super fit. We trained twice a day. We trained 7 o'clock in the morning because it was so hot, and then we trained early evening in the swimming pool, ice baths, everything. And we was like lean and mean, and we was all ready. We didn't have to do a pre-season. We went straight into the first team when we got back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this team, they played in the NASL for one season, didn't they?
Yeah. Then they moved to another place, another
right.
franchise.
Okay. Because I think they had, as you mentioned, some players already were at West Ham. You knew already. I think Yilmaz Orhan was there as well, wasn't he?
Yes. There you go.
Okay, but it was a very multicultural side. A few Germans, Brazilian, Portuguese.
No, they was from everywhere. But everybody spoke English. Everybody was good. Everybody was great, mate. Matter of fact, it was good. You had to fly everywhere. We had to fly everywhere because we was on the island.
Right. Understood.
Yeah, but when we went away for like nearly a week because we played two games. We would play two games while we was away.
And I guess travelling to different grounds was much different to the UK.
Oh, yeah.
You have to go on the plane to go to away grounds.
Yep. It was like 4 hours just coming back to America, I think it was, or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. So you ended up back at Leyton Orient, where you started your career.
Yeah.
I guess it was just a fresh challenge for you, no?
No, I wanted to go back there. Jimmy Bloomfield was there. I wanted to go back there. I was there a few months, and Len Cheesewright pulled me. He went, "Jimmy's not very well." I said, "What's the matter with him?" So he told me what was the matter with him. I went, "Oh my God." And he was still training the way he was, and it was one of those. He just died, and it just killed everybody, really. That did, because he was getting the team together as well, and the new manager come in, and it just didn't work. Then I thought, right, it's time to go, and I was asked to go over to Belgium. An agent came to me. I didn't have an agent at all. An agent got in touch with me and said, the team in Belgium would like to see you over there. I went, right. So I said, what team is it? And he said, it was a team called Beerschot, and it's in Antwerp. So I've never heard of them. So it was one of those. I've heard of Antwerp because when we won the third division with Leyton Orient, we went out to Belgium to play them. It was like a Division 2 side then, and we beat them over there. I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So I had to go to a trial game in Holland. So it was like a pre-season friendly, but I was there on trial only for one game. I played half a game. The manager brought me off. He said, "We want to sign you. You're just on the bench. You'll be signed after the game." So I had to go all the way back to Belgium, which was about four or five hours on the bus afterwards, and they'd done a contract for me and signed me there and then. But I stayed out there for 2.5 years, and that was it. And the worst thing about it, I said to them, I'm going to go back to England at the end of the season. And I'm still under contract with them. They said, no, we heard you're going to Italy. I went, am I? Where am I going? So, no, we heard you're going to Italy. If you want to go, you can go, but we're keeping your registrations. So, even at this time now, they've still got my registration to play football. So I could never play football again. I could play reserve football, but I couldn't. So when I come back, Les Gore, I knew at late night when I was a schoolboy. He was one of the scouts at late night. Then he went to Cheltenham, and he got hold of me. He said, "We want you to take the youth team over at Cheltenham." So I got a job straight away at Cheltenham, and I had unbelievable players there. I had some unbelievable. I got eight of them in the first team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we're looking at which year?
60. I'm coming 69 now. It was a few years ago, mate.
Okay. Fair enough. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great team. Yeah.
So you ended up managing Leyton Orient. You were at Darlington. I think you were a caretaker at Peterborough at one time.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about those experiences? I mean, obviously, the transition from player to coaching and management is massive. But at the same time, did you implement the styles that you learnt from other managers in your role?
First of all, I tried to be learn off of other people and kind of think, what would they do now? And at the end of the day, you still got to do your own thing and you've got to be your own person. I was a player person. I loved the players to be happy. I wanted the players to be comfortable, because if the players are comfortable, so what I used to do when I was at Lake Norrin, I went from Cambridge United to Lake Norrin. And when my first time I went to Lake Norrin, I said, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask the player to fetch his wife, even if he's got an agent. So I used to speak to the agent. The player and his wife wasn't in the room. And one of the agents said to me, he wants this, he wants this, he wants this. I said, has he got a club? He went, no, he hasn't got a club. I said, am I the first person to speak to him? He went, yeah, you are. I said, what if you don't get another offer? Oh, he'll get another offer. I said, what if you don't? I'll tell you what I can give him. He said, the agent went, no, I'll tell you how much you're going to give him. I went, all right, you tell me how much I'm going to give him. So he told me. I went, fair enough, this is how much I can give him. And if it's not right, that's fair enough. I told him how much I could give him. He went, that's not enough. I said, he hasn't got a job at the moment. And I'll tell you what I do. I do a contract for him for 2 years. And after 3 months, if he picks up what I think he should pick up, then I'll give him a new contract on top of that. No, we can't have that. I said, he hasn't got a job. Well, if he don't get a job, you're stopping the boy from earning money. I'll get him a job. I tell you, wait, 6 months and the boy didn't even get a club. I was watching. I was always looking out for him to see what he was doing. And he didn't get a job. So how the hell he was living, I do not know. But with the other boys that I used to get in, I used to say, right, these are the players I want. If they haven't got an agent, I'm happy. If they have, right, this is the thing. Right, so fetch your wife. So I spoke to the agent. And the agent gave me everything he wanted. But I said, fair enough, mate. I want to speak to the player now. Spoke to the player. All the player wants to do, he wants to play football and make sure that everything's okay and he's happy. That's what players are. The agent's supposed to do all the work and do the money side of it. I said, well, right, there you go. I want to speak to your wife. What do you want to speak to my wife for? I want to speak to your wife. So I always go to the wife, right, what are you thinking your husband wants to earn? So she said, it's not what he wants to earn, it's what I'd like him to earn. So I said, well, tell me. And I had 5 or 6 wives coming to me, and they always got more, or I asked for more than the player did. It's God's honest truth. And at the end of the day, I said, will you be happy with that money? Will you be happy with that money and you're signing on fees? Yep, he'd be over the moon with that. So I said, will you sign the contract for him? She said, I can't do that. I said, no, you can't. That you'll be happy to live in this area around here? Yep. If he's getting that kind of money and the signing on fees, we'll be happy. So I said, right, fair enough. So I bought the player in. But before, I always used to say to the player, how much money do you want? The wife always got more money than the player. So it was him. I said, your wife asked for more money. And he looked at her, all the boys looked at him like that, said, what you asked for? And she told him, said, you ain't going to get that. You ain't going to get that. So I said, why aren't you going to get that? I said, if your wife is happy, are you going to be happy? If my wife's happy to be in this area, I'll be happy to play football in this area. I said, well, forget your agent, let's just do the deal then. So I always ask the wife first, to make sure it was good. And if she said, no, I don't want to be in this area, I said, well, it's a waste of time coming down here. Thanks very much. And that was it. But most of the time, they always signed. Yeah.
And that's the reason the Cockney rhyming slang is trouble and strife, isn't it?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, mate, if everybody's happy, you know, you got a good team, because everybody's an individual, and you've got to treat that everybody as an individual.
Yeah.
And you've got to try to find the best individuals to make into a team, and then build it, because you might not be better than the player who you want in the team, but you're comfortable to be there. And if you're comfortable to be there, you'll give me more. You'll give me more than the person who's not comfortable.
That's fair enough. I mean, I've spoken to Lee about his methods, and he's very similar in the sense that he gets to know the person.
You've got to know.
Yeah, and it's all about common sense as well. He uses a lot of common sense when it comes to his techniques. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, you got to know, mate. You got to know what their family are, where they are. I mean, I had one boy travelling down from Mansfield every day, and I used to say to him, "It's a long way to keep travelling, mate." But he never asked me about my wife. I said, "I'm more worried about you travelling down from Mansfield every day at the moment. But how is your wife?" Then he'd sit down for 20 minutes and talk about his wife to me. Then he was happy again. But he was one of those. It was one of them centre forwards I always wanted to have, and he signed and he scored quite a few goals for us. So he at the end of the day, he was happy. He was all right. But he was one of those, you know. Always had to watch out for him, make sure he got home properly, and give him a ring. Oh, everything all right? You back home yet? Things like that. Yeah.
Did it become a bit tiresome having to micromanage someone?
No, because I mean, they're your family. At the end of the day, they're your family. I mean, nowadays, you know, the manager's the manager, and it's down to everybody else to look after the players.
Mm.
But them days, it was, you know, it was us, and that was it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Just a couple more questions before I wrap it up, Tommy. You spent a bit of time in Spain as a director of football of a club out there, and then you also went to Finland. Two contrasting places in terms of culture, in terms of obviously weather and football style. Now, can you see why, based on the time that you spent in Spain, can you see why they're technically better than players in the UK?
Because it's warmer. even to the kids at 5 years of age, their ball's on the floor. They're passing the ball on the floor. They mustn't put it in the air at all. It's got to be on the floor. Yeah, they got teams of like five and seven sides, little pitches all marked out properly, goals and little goals, and so the goalkeeper can dive and save and things like that. But it's and they're shouting at that age, keep the ball on the floor, keep the ball on the floor. Yeah. Movement. Yeah. It's incredible, really.
Do you think
Finland's a different kettle of fish? It was, I mean, the first time I went there, it was 40 below. I landed at the airport with my wife. Got out, and I went, the snow was as high as a window. And we went to a hotel and stayed in the hotel for the night. Then they put us in this house, and driving us backwards and forwards. We went, when I first got there, we went training in this dome, which is like two football fields and about three football fields high. And you had a little stand in there all the way around it, and you had a football field in the middle. And people, that was there, like pre-season games in there. Yeah, it's an incredible place.
Can you imagine? And what were the parents' attitudes like when it came to their kids' development? Because I've heard a lot of horror stories out here based on a lot of parents getting involved in games, yelling at their kids and whatnot. And I've got a friend who's the manager of a youth team, and he says, well, he's actually a teacher as well, and he says, I tell Tom, the parents of the kids, well, do you come to my classes and interrupt? So don't do it on the pitch. The same sort of situation.
Yeah, I was pretty hyped because in these countries, mums and dads are not allowed on the field.
Right.
Mums and dads are only allowed on one side of the field, and they've got to sit down in the stand if they want to be there, and they cannot abuse the linesmen or the referees and anything like that. Otherwise, they get chucked out.
So do you think this is something that we're lacking, the discipline side of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think that my dad used to be. My dad used to take me everywhere when I was little. Take me to every game I played, he used to take me. And I used to hear him. I used to hear him shouting. Not on me, but at the old team. You know, when it was a freak, mark your man, and things like that. Because at the end of the day, it's a person who scores a goal. It ain't space for scores a goal, it's a person.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell to the players. It's no good you marking space boys when the bloke run past you.
Mm.
You got to make sure you're with him. And I think they're trying to get it right. You know, they're keeping people to one side. And if there's any bad language what goes about, they just go over and talk to them, say, can you leave the field now? The referee won't carry on. I don't think he'll carry on if he gets abused at least. And these only young kids doing the refereeing, learning their game.
Fair enough. Well, one more thing before I wrap it up, Tom. I'm going to put you right on the spot here. Italia 90, England got to the semi-finals. The last World Cup, England got to the semi-finals. How close do you think this England team is to winning something, let alone European Championships or even a World Cup, dare I say?
I think they've got the right manager. I think he's done a great job. The only thing I don't like is when the ball is rolled out to the two centre-backs and one centre-back starts running, nobody else goes back to help fill the other space in. And they're, you know, trying to run it out, or they're trying to pass it out, and they're being closed down. Sometimes, from the goalkeeper, the manager says, "We've got to play from the back. We've got to play from the back." Yeah, we've got to play. But it's times to play and times to play. Time to hit this front man, or to chuck it into midfield, and you've still got people behind you who are defending. But if you give it to the last man, the very last man in front of the goalkeeper, and he tries to take somebody on and lose it, there's only one thing for it, and that's a goal against him. That's the only thing I've got against that.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, Tommy, thank you.
I think the right manager's here, and I hope he stays a bit longer. I think he's done a great job. Yeah.
Well, it looks like they're backing him, and they're giving him the resources to do his job. And the one thing I'd noticed at the last World Cup is that the press were very tolerant, very lenient, probably because the FA gave them access to a lot of the players. So the relationship between the FA and the players and the press was much better than what it has been in previous years. But it does look as if they're giving Southgate a chance to develop and produce a good team.
I've got one more thing to say to you.
Go ahead.
Tell me the people who went from West Ham to Chelsea.
Oh, well, over the years, what, you mean Joe Cole, Frank Lampard?
Listen, like Joe Cole. Like Joe Cole, I'm at late night, Joe Cole's a YTS boy. And at late night, they used to do all their kind of exam work upstairs at late night. So, I'm manager at late night. The front door goes, I'm the nearest to the front door, so I go to the front door, two wooden big doors. So I've opened the door, and this young boy's there. I knew who he was, but I don't know if he knew me. So this is how cheeky he was. He's knocked on the door, and he's late to do his exams upstairs anyway with the football. Knocked on the door. He went to, this this is where I've got to come to do it. I said, I think it's upstairs, boy. Do me a favour, mate. Can you make me a cup of tea? God's honest truth. So I said, how many sugars do you want? He went, two, please. I have two sugars. Make sure, not too much milk. And don't be long, because I want to drink before I go in the room. I went, okay. Now, I'm manager of the club, right? So he ain't got a Scooby what's going on. So I've gone in and made him a cup, took it upstairs. No biscuits, he's gone. I don't think the club can afford biscuits. Can't afford biscuits, he's gone. I went, no. Now, if he's listening to this, he will know, because I got straight on the phone to Harry. I said, Harry, I got a young boy come, knocked on the door, got here a bit late. Don't tell me, I know who it is. I said, I've opened the door, and he said to me, make me a cup of tea. You know, Harry's like, come on. Leave it with me, he's got us sorted out. I said, no, don't, just take it. I'm going to not tell him who I am, but have a little word with him, Harry. He's got to be more respectful when he goes to places. And that. So he said, leave it with me, mate, I'll sort him out. And it was one of those things. I went in to see Paul Clark, my number two. I told him, he couldn't stop laughing. I said, it's going to be you making this tea.
That's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Well, now you mentioned that, I've got so many other questions, but I don't know if... Ray Wilkins, Peter Shilton, these guys were at Leyton Orient, weren't they, at some point?
I had Schultz. Schultz was with me. He was the hardest person to do a contract with. Hardest person in the world. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. I went, hold it. What's going on? How many things do you want? Yeah, I've got him under this one, I've got him under this one, I've got him under that one. I went, bloody hell's bells. And then the game goes on, and I couldn't stop laughing. He couldn't even reach the halfway line and goal kicks. So, it's coming half time. I said, have you got him Ali Baba boots on, mate? He said, what do you mean, Ali Baba? I said, well, the ball keeps going to the halfway line and spinning back. I said, I don't know if you've got them curly toes on them boots of yours. Anyway, I'm not staying here. I said, well, you're staying for the rest of the season anyway, so don't worry, I'll get you a new pair of boots. But I mean, he was still making great saves when he came to us, mate.
Mm.
And Will, I mean, he never headed the ball. He brought everything down on his chest. Any part of his body brought everything down on, apart from his head. He wouldn't head a ball at all. But he just asked for this. He asked for two things. He got it, mate, played the game in training every day. Good as gold, and that was it. Good as gold.
Brilliant.
But I had one player, and I've got to say this name, Amara Simba. If the late night people are listening to you, mate, they will know. French international, knocked on the front door, and Clarkey opened the door that day, and he's knocked on the door. He said, he's 6'3", he was. Built like a shit brick house. Didn't drink, didn't smoke. He said, he told him who he was. I'd just come back from Brazil playing seven-a-side football over there indoor. He said, I'm looking for a club. He's 33, fit as anything. So he's bought it, Clark, he's brought him into me. He said, this boy wants a trial. So I said, sit down, please. Mate, I'll give anybody a trial, because you never know who you're going to have. I used to take anybody in if they were, and I used to put them on the ground, walk with the boys, and if they couldn't pass the ball from A to B, I said, thanks very much, take him back, Clarkie, give him his clothes, let him go back home. I said, Clarkie, take Amara over, put him in the game. 20 minutes after he's got there, he went, Tom, get your ass over here quick. He said, this boy, you won't believe him. So I've gone over there, I'm watching him, mate. He played as a centre forward or number 10, quick, technical skills. He knew everybody at Arsenal, all the played with him. Vieira, all the top French boys played in their national team with him. He was the best player I've ever seen.
Really? Wow.
Best player I've ever seen.
Wow.
And he's come to me at late night in Division 2. To get a game of football. I told, and the funny thing, now I've got to ring Barry Earn, haven't I? Now you can ask for a better chairman in sport to work for. Barry Earn, if he liked you, he'd give you anything, mate. Mm-hmm. If he didn't like you, he'd tell you. He was one of those. I've gone to him, I said, Baz, I've got a player. You've always got a player, he said. I said, I've got a real good player. And he wants this, this and this. He went, bloody hell. I said, wait till you see him play. I said, then you'll say to me, give him a bit more. Because if I said to Barry, you do his contract, I know he'd give him more money. Well, I can always have a bit of money left on me to give it back to the player again. I said, if you score some more goals, there's some more money for you and things like that. And it was one of those situations. He used to score two goals, or three goals, or one goal. I think I come off now, boss. And I used to say to him, Amara, score another two, you can come off. But the crowd love me. I said, they love you even more if you score another two. So stay on the field. Mate, he could look after himself out there as well. If people come to kick him, he'd make sure he never got hurt. He was clever. He was clever off the ball. He was clever on the ball. He knew when people were coming behind him. He knew everything. What a player.
Mm.
What a player.
Fantastic. I'll have to look that one up.
Amara's clever. I think he's got three of the world best goals ever scored.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll definitely look into that one. Definitely.
Look up for him. And if you can get him, mate, put him on the podcast, it'd be unbelievable.
Yeah, well, you're the contact. You can put me through to him.
if I can get hold of him, I'll put him on to him.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. He's back over in France now, I believe.
Okay. Nice. Well, Tommy, look, thank you ever so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you, and hopefully we can do this again sometime.
Yeah. That'd be great, mate. I hope it's gone all right for you.
Nice, absolutely brilliant, brilliant. But before I let you go, do you have any social media that you want to promote? Anything you want to mention?
No, get me out.
You heard it. Bring him home.
Get me home, yeah.
Excellent. There you go. Brilliant. For those of you still listening, we're on Twitter @ShootTheDefence. So until next time, take care.